in terms of the size of our budget deficit, we were the worst in the country. Today we're 20th. So there are 31 states that are worse off than we are.
Hi, this is Matt Welch for Reason TV, and I'm joined this morning by the governor of Puerto Rico, Luis Fortuño. Welcome.
Thank you, Matt.
Most people don't realize that there is a governor in the United States of America who has cut spending by 20% in the last 2 years. So let's walk through how that happened, basically. Start with telling us, what did you run on back in 2008, and what did your party run on? And then what did you discover once you checked under the hood of state?
Certainly. Well, we knew we were going to be facing a serious fiscal situation, but it was three times as bad as we thought it would be. And I had said that we needed to shrink the size of government and that I wanted to actually put back into people's hands the money that they had earned working every day, and that was my pledge. However, when I came into office, we didn't have money to meet our first payroll. We had to take out a loan. It was really bad. So our cuts are deeper than any other part of the country because of the situation, dire situation that we face. Actually, the rating agencies were about to throw us into junk status, and we had to act by time to avoid that from happening. In the first 2 years, however, we have been successful in slashing the size of government by 20%, and because of that, we have commenced lowering taxes across the board.
Now, tell us about, you had to go to New York to actually talk with the ratings heads. How did that meeting go?
Sure. Actually, even before being sworn in, I knew that they have been lowering our rating year after year, and we were at the brink of becoming, you know, or being thrown into junk status. So before being sworn in December 08, I flew up to New York, met with the rating agencies, acknowledged that we had a problem. I thought it was bad. It was much worse, but at least told them that we had a plan, and we bought 6 months. And we immediately started working on that plan and delivering on that plan. And that's why, actually, our rating has come up, and people are realizing that this is the way to go.
Sketch out the size of the problem. What was the budget deficit? What was the state of the economy when you took office, and how has that changed in 2 years?
Of course. Our recession commenced 2 full years before it started in the rest of the country. So the economy really was at a standstill at best. Secondly, our state budget deficit was the largest, proportionally speaking, in the country.
Actually, even worse than California.
Much worse,
Illinois.
Proportionally. Actually, 44% of actually revenues was deficit. So it was really bad. And it was impossible to handle any type of organization like that, much worse a government. So we didn't have a choice. It was not like, we wanted to do this way or that way, or we knew it was going to be 20%. We just did what was right.
And unemployment at the time was more or less?
Closer to 17%. Wow. So just imagine, we had been in the deepest recession since the 30s. The unemployment was, double digits, approaching 20%. And no light at the end of the tunnel at all, and no money in the bank.
Concretely, what were the first steps that you took to cut the size of government?
Well, the first step was to cut my own salary by 10%. You have to, actually act that way if you're in public service, I feel. I slashed 5% the cabinet secretary's salaries as well. And then we turned to everything else. And we slashed by 15% all government contracts. If you wanted to contract with government, we're going to slash 15% off right away.
And that existing contracts you ripped up?
We went back to them, and we said, we're either moving to another place or we slash 15% because we always had escape clauses, and contracts do have escape clauses. So we told them, we cannot continue paying you as if there is, no tomorrow. We eliminated credit cards from government, on official vehicles, cell phones. My cell phone, I pay for it. I travel with my own credit card and I get reimbursed. And that's the way to do it, I feel. And then we had no choice but turn to overbloated government bureaucracy. And we, by voluntary and mandatory measures, we slash 17,000 public employee positions.
Out of a total state sector of?
Well, actually, central government was about 140,000. And about 12,000 were mandatory and the balance were voluntary. We just had another window, voluntary window of early retirement, and we just added another 4,000 to that. And again, the idea is for them to either retire altogether, or we have provided them with incentives to create their own businesses. Entrepreneurship should be part of our culture, and provided them with also incentives to go back to school if they wanted to. So we really wanted them to continue growing as a person.
Now, the sort of liberal progressive idea about economics that sort of obtains right now, the Paul Krugman-esque idea, is that if you cut the size of government in the teeth of a recession, you're just going to make a recession into a depression. So this is an interesting experiment. You've cut the size and the cost of government. What has happened to the economy of Puerto Rico?
Well, from 17% unemployment is down to 14.5%, and all economic indicators are moving in the right direction. Actually, by slashing taxes, I'm convinced that it will move even quicker in the right direction. But the truth of the matter is that after being in a recession for 5 years, this trimester we're seeing positive numbers in essentially every single economic indicator. So it's the opposite.
Now, you cut government first and then taxes second. Taxes was just last month, if I'm not mistaken. Talk a little bit, because it's interesting, about the numbers on the tax cuts, and then also the very unique to Puerto Rico system of triggers in the future for tax cuts.
Of course. First of all, our Internal Revenue Code is a mirror image of the federal Internal Revenue Code. So in that sense, we had the 54 code, which is pretty similar. So what we've done
and
in Puerto Rico.
And just to interrupt, you don't pay federal taxes.
We don't pay federal taxes on Puerto Rico source income.
Okay.
If I make money in any of the 50 states, then I pay federal taxes on that. We do pay FICA and Medicare, you know, and all that stuff, but we don't pay income tax. So what we did in Puerto Rico is doable at the national level. And what we did is we slashed individual and corporate taxes across the board. On the corporate side, we had a 39% top corporate rate plus a 2% surtax that was imposed by my predecessor. So it was actually an effective tax rate of 41%. We slashed that down to 30% this year and to 25% by 2014. On the individual side, we slashed taxes by 25% this year, and actually it's a sliding scale in the next 5 years that will, at the end of the day, save taxpayers an average of 49% in their taxes. What happens halfway through it, however, is that we must balance our budget by 2013, by the end of 2013. If we haven't balanced our budget, if we're not meeting our goals on the fiscal side, then we will not move into the next phase in 2014, 15, and 16. So that makes the taxpayer the watchdog of our tax cuts and the watchdog of responsible government.
Now, this would suggest that you're basically bringing the taxpayers on board as part of this project. But how has the reaction been so far? I imagine that it hasn't been totally smooth. There must be people who squawk when you cut 17,000 government jobs and have a different idea of economics than sort of mainstream.
Well, there are some that have a philosophy that actually the government can handle our money much better than we can. I totally disagree. I believe that actually people are working hard, sometimes with two or three jobs, to earn that money. They should keep it. And they are no much better than any government how to handle it, starting with my own. So I went on TV. I've been preaching this message. There is some disbelief out there. I'll be honest with you. People don't believe that actually we're slashing taxes dramatically, as dramatically as we are, because this had never happened before. The last time, in Puerto Rico at least, that the government slashed taxes was almost 20 years ago. Ever since then, the government has been raising taxes and taking more and more of our own money. So this we're moving in the right direction for the first time in a generation. And so there's some disbelief. Actually, I went on the State of the State address with the tax return, and showing the voters which line they will use to get a credit this first year of the tax reform, because I know a lot of people simply cannot believe this is happening. There was some pushback when we commenced doing what we did, but then again, I get elected to do the right thing, not to be popular every single day, and I did the right thing, and I'm convinced that at the end of the day, taxpayers will actually be doing much better than they were before because of what we've done, and this will be permanent. And that's exactly what I want to do.
What are the sources of opposition? Who's trying to block you?
Well, certainly the minority in our state legislature, the unions, have been trying to block us as well. But at the end of the day, there's nothing more powerful than individual freedom, desire to grow and do better for yourself and your family. And that's more powerful than any union, any government, any party. And I'm convinced that that's why this will be permanent.
You're here in Washington right now to attend the Conservative Political Action Conference, and you've been at National Governors Association type of meetings. What message do you have to the other governors, particularly the new ones who got elected in 2010, who want to cut size of government and reduce things? What is replicatable about the Puerto Rican experiment so far?
Well, let me tell you, a lot of states are facing exactly the same situation we faced 2 years ago. Actually, we were dead last when I started my in office 2 years ago in terms of the size of our budget deficit. We were the worst in the country. Today we're 20th. So there are 31 states that are worse off than we are.
And how has the bond rating rankings changed? Weren't you 51st basically?
Exactly, and actually today we have the highest rating in 35 years. And for the first time since 1983, the rating agencies have provided us with a positive outlook for our economy and our fiscal situation. And they're saying it, I'm not saying this. You know, it's the third parties that are saying this. What I've told the new governors is that they must act swiftly and do everything they need to do year one, communicate it properly, and level with people. You know, if it's bad, tell people that it's bad and tell them what you're going to do. And start with your own salary. And if you do that, people will buy it. There'll be some pushback. Well, people will buy it, and there'll be enough time for you to actually then lower taxes and do, you know, implement pro-growth policies, which is what we all believe in.
Now, you are a member of the Republican Party. At the same time, you're a member of the tell us about that.
Of course. The old statehood Republican Party in Puerto Rico, back in the 60s.
The old statehood Republican Party.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was the Republican Party in Puerto Rico. In the 60s, switched its name into what I will call the New Party for Progress. And essentially, because we had pro-growth policies. But we are fiscally conservative, a fiscally conservative party that wishes to lower taxes and actually maintain in check the size of government.
Tell us about statehood now. You're pro-statehood. What is the case for it, and where are those politics right now in Puerto Rico?
Sure. Well, we've been a part of this great country since 1898. Actually, we have been citizens since 1917. And we have served in every single war alongside our, you know, citizens from, you know, every other state in this country in every single war in the 20th century and the 21st century as well. So if we are good enough to fight alongside other citizens from every single state in the country in the trenches, we should be good enough to also partake in the decision-making process in this country. And I'm convinced that if we were to be part of that process, actually, I believe we have a lot to bring to the table. We are bicultural and bilingual. So if we want to open trade with the rest of the region, I believe we can be extremely helpful in that as well. And it just makes no sense that there are 4 million American citizens that cannot fully participate in the decision-making process of laws and regulations that apply to us today. You know, all laws and regulations that apply to every single, you know, state apply to Puerto Rico, but we cannot participate in that decision-making process.
So you can vote. You can't vote for president, but you could run for president. Is that
well? We're yes, because we're natural-born citizens, yeah. And actually. If you move to Puerto Rico, you lose your right to vote for the president. If I move to D.C. or Virginia or California, I gain that right, right, because we're citizens. It's a territorial issue, not a citizenship issue.
What needs to happen in order for statehood to take place?
Well, it's very simple. A request, I guess, you know, will be the simplest way, a request by the people of Puerto Rico, the voters in Puerto Rico for that. And a simple majority in the House and the Senate, and a signature by the President of an enabling bill. That's it. It's a bill.
What is there any traction for that in on the mainland side of the equation?
Well, yes, indeed. And actually, there was a bill that was approved on the House side in Washington last year. The Senate did not act upon it, though. So now we're back to square one as to what are we going to do. And I know we're getting into a presidential race. So there may not be a lot of people wishing to discuss this. But we've been citizens since 1917. We're proud of that. Our men and women have served with valor and courage in every single war ever since then. And it is time for us to participate fully in that decision-making process at the national level.
You mentioned being a bilingual state, essentially. I'm sure it puts you in an interesting position when it comes to questions of immigration. Puerto Rico had immigration to the mainland in the 50s and I guess in the 70s in places like the Northeast and Florida. And also you're part of the country and you get a lot of immigrants from places like Cuba and Haiti. Talk about how that perspective makes you different or the same than sort of mainstream Republican approaches towards immigration.
Well, certainly. If you want to call me something, I'm a Reagan Republican in the sense that I believe that this country needs to keep growing and opening trade and opening ourselves to ideas. And I believe we need to open ourselves in an orderly fashion and legal fashion to new people that want to work hard, want to add to our national fabric, and want to do better for their own families. It has to be an orderly fashion, of course, and that's what we have lacked for the last few years. But I believe that if we do it correctly, we actually receive a lot of Cubans, for example, in the 60s and 70s, and they added tremendously to our economy and to the fabric of our society in Puerto Rico, and we're proud of that. We are receiving a lot of Dominicans, actually, lately. If it's done in an orderly fashion, people that want to work hard should be received with open arms and make sure that they go through the legal processes so that they can participate in this country.
Should there be more visas given to immigrants than there are currently?
Canada does it, and many other countries do it around the globe. And actually, they do it, and they see their economies grow when they do it in an orderly fashion. So there's no reason why we should not be doing that. I believe we need to attract more people. Our population is not growing as fast as it needs to in order for our economy to keep growing. That has happened in Europe as well. So we need to really sit back and decide what are we going to do and what do we want to do as a country and then provide for a process so that it can happen legally.
You also sit in an interesting geographical place in the Caribbean. There's a lot of questions on various islands there about the effects of drug policy on your island and transshipment. What is your perspective on our kind of drug laws and whether the drug war is working?
Well, it's not working. It's obvious that it's not. And actually, what has happened is that when the border was closed down in the Southwest, a lot of the drug trafficking then moved shifted towards the Caribbean area, and that's where we are. And we have seen an increase in violence in our region. And certainly that is of grave concern to all of us. And I have been coming here to Congress, actually, to talk about this just this week, because either we need the resources to handle this, or policies have to be amended, but something must give. Otherwise, we continue in this violent wave that is affecting our society, which was not the case before. And all this happened after the border was closed in the Southwest.
When you say policies have to be amended, is there anything in particular that you personally advocate?
Well, in right now what I want is make sure that we have the resources to handle this. We are not provided that adequate resources. People forget that we are the third border, shall we say. And that our area has to be treated as the northern and southern border. And because the moment you're in Puerto Rico, you're in Iowa. Because there is no immigration papers or anything that you have to fill up. It's like moving, driving from, or flying actually from LA to New York. It's exactly the same thing. I believe that actually those that, and we're doing what I'm gonna tell you, those that have an addiction, must be treated not as criminals, but they should be treated as people that actually have an addiction, and you can have an addiction to anything, and then they should be treated accordingly. And we are providing medical processes to treat people that have an addiction.
Talk briefly about some of the things that you're doing in terms of public-private partnerships and getting private sector money to do things even like help build or refurbish schools.
Well, it is obvious that our governments no longer have the kind of money we used to have to develop our basic infrastructure. So what we've done is that we went around the world, actually, and we looked at the Canadian model, the Australian model, European model, and then we drafted our own P3 or public private partnership legislation that is extremely effective, and actually now it is attracting a lot of capital from all over the world to construct and maintain schools, roads and highways, airports, water projects, energy projects, and actually the interest that we have attracted is unbelievable. I believe that instead of having a project for one highway in one state, states should move towards having P3 programs so that all of our infrastructure can be upgraded with private capital. And that it's done on a regular basis in many other countries. For some reason, in the states, that's not being done, with very few exceptions. I believe we can be the showcase of P3 projects for the rest of America, given what we've seen and what we will be seeing in 2011.
Where are you in that process?
Sure, we have already commenced the modernization process of our schools. And we have the first phase one is 100 schools. We've actually already contracted out about 30, 35 of them. We should be finished by the end of the summer. In the second quarter of this year, we will actually have contracted out two highways. And we're hoping that by the second half of this year, we'll be able to contract out our main airport. So that all will have happened in 2011.
Talk a little bit about your personal philosophy. Where did you get these crazy ideas about how to run government and how best to have economic policy and such?
Well, I was in school here in D.C. Back in the late 70s, early 80s. And I lived through the end of Carter and Reagan. And it was really President Reagan who brought me into the party. And then I started reading a lot about it and following what was going on. And I saw how tough it was at the beginning of President Reagan's term to actually clamp down a runaway government. But at the end of the day, we then experienced the longest growth we have ever experienced except for a period of wars. It worked, and it worked extremely well back in the 80s.
Even though he didn't actually cut government on that.
Well, right? There was a arms race going on, and states, thank goodness, don't have any to worry about that. So that was another aspect that actually affected that policy. But if you take away the arms race, he indeed was able to slash the size of government. So I felt that if you apply that at the state level, it should work. And that's exactly what we've done.
And what have you been doing in your career? Your first term governor, what were you doing before?
Well, for 4 years, I represented Puerto Rico in the US Congress. And before that, I was just raising my kids and practicing law and enjoying myself.
You're in the middle of CPAC here, as mentioned before. There's a lot of foo-farah over whether CPAC is becoming too tolerant towards gay Republican groups. Where do you stand on social issues or where the Republican Party is right now with some of these divides?
Well, let me tell you, I believe in the free flow of ideas. I don't think the government or anybody else should try to stop that. That's why we are the freest and greatest nation in the world. And to try to stop that, you know, you may disagree with some of the groups that are maybe there, but that's great. You should be exposed to their ideas, and then you should decide whether you disagree or agree with them. But I don't believe in shutting off different groups, on the contrary.
Do you have any ambitions to get involved in national mainland politics?
I want to assist the Hispanic community in many ways. And I would love to see the Republican Party embrace the Hispanic community even more so than it does today. So to the extent that I can assist in that, I would love to be helpful in that area.
Tell us what you're doing with the school system.
Well, I believe in choice on the one hand, and I believe parents have a better understanding of what's best for their kids than any government. By the same token, I believe that we have a values crisis in our nation, and that affects Puerto Rico as well. So we have taken up what's called character counts, and you may have heard about it. You know, many other counties and cities and states, they have done this at the local level. We are the first state or territory to do this at the state level, and we have started a process by which we want to cover all public schools with the character counts program. We have started with 205 schools, 72,000 students. But the idea is to take this to every single public school in Puerto Rico.
What does it mean in practice?
What it means is that the curriculum is adjusted to actually underscore basic universally accepted values like honesty, responsibility, hard work, civility. We're not trying to impose values on anyone. These are universally accepted values. And actually, before we even started this, we checked and we asked among students and parents and opinion leaders in Puerto Rico how did it feel about these values, and you know, it was 9-1 approval. So we said, okay, we're on the right track, and then we are adjusting our curriculum so that we indeed underscore and strengthen those values, so our kids at the end of the day are better citizens.
And you mentioned something about school choice. What, if anything, are you doing in that motion to free up parental choice of
schools? Well, in Puerto Rico, we had tried that before, and we had some legal issues. We are at this moment looking at what has been done in Florida and other states to implement it in Puerto Rico. We want parents to have a greater say in what happens with their kids.
Right now, if I'm a parent of a child in Puerto Rico, can I say I don't like the school that I'm next to, I want to go to that school?
You could do it. Yes, you could do that. But we want to even free up that process even more. And of course, what I call the permanent government tries to stop you from doing that. So we want to make sure that we empower parents even further. And that's the process we're in.
Looking at the national scene, what other politicians, governors, people out there do you see as either a role model or a colleague, someone that you think is pointing in the right direction for just public policy in general?
Well, I believe Mitch Daniels has done an excellent job in Indiana. He actually tried the P3 program with right. One or two highways, as I understand it. Same way, Tim Pawlenty did a few things that were interesting in handling size of government in Minnesota, and I enjoyed, you know, really sitting down with him and sharing. He shared some of his ideas with me as well, and I like that as well. I just spoke with a new governor, Rick Scott from Florida, and they are doing what we have already done in terms of the Medicaid use of Medicaid funds. In trying to move into a greater flexibility for beneficiaries, and so I believe a lot of things are happening all over the country, and I'm excited about that. It's happening at the state level.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, man.
And best of luck. For Reason TV, I am Matt Welch.